find a place in education and the role of the parent. And we just spell that out and said very forthright.
The role of building character.
Absolutely.
Of course, I'm not going to say that Dr. Marlon in public schools can't build character. I remember some public school teachers were pretty good at it. It's my fashion, at least, it's on borders, you know.
And with those three things, we just jumped in and looked at the situation. You know it so well. And there was no question about it, as we examined it, that this was not a narrow partisan approach, but the public interest is deeply involved, and that the child has to be the focus of our social attention. And as we looked, it became clearer and clearer, I suppose, the obvious as a way of getting away from you, but it became clear to us that inner city, locked-in child situation was really the one that appealed to both our hearts and our intellects. And the commission itself, we tried to build wherever possible to draw out the logic that was either in the full commission report or to utilize precedents, because we're deeply aware of the constitutional issues that are involved here. And where, therefore, what we did was simply look at that inner city child, recognize that this was the primary area of desperately needed response, and came up with a series of recommendations which were predicated first on the notion that the whole welfare program is designed not to keep people on welfare, but to get them off. And that if we encourage, for example, working mothers by small additional subsidies to improve her own learning skills in the job market, a modest modification in that simple device and using that same philosophy might allow the same mother to recognize that public housing, public dieting, public clinics might be softened in a way by a choice in a non-public school if the parents so want it. So we have proposed that the welfare legislation take into account that small extra dimension, which might bring up perhaps up to $100 more for that welfare parent of the working poor. And throughout it all, Mr. President, we also stressed, and this obviously will not be noted by many, the important role of the private sector. The non-publics, you know, would use the words, "The going get tough, the tough get going, and things are tough." And to us, therefore, it would not be asking public officials to take on the total support level of the non-public sector in any sense of the word. So we responded to the poor first. We do feel there that, again, the lack of options is a kind of demeaning quality, and that if anything could be done, voucher system, very systematic scale, we'd like to see it tried, particularly in those areas. And after we finished looking at the inner city poor problem, and I stress that I'm telescoping this, I'm sorry, I'm going to admit it very carefully, that the next big chunk of people are those middle Americans,
yeah.
The typical working American,
yeah.
who really
are forgotten.
The forgotten man in our society, who's sacrificing and trying to make ends meet and carry his own tax bill. And there, I guess, is the heart of the larger problem, certainly in terms of numbers, and we've gone to tax credit route. We really feel that despite the constitutional snarls, we didn't get ourselves hung up in purchase of service. You know, it was a body blow that came out in a sense, and yet we, some of us were anticipating it.
You made that
to Pennsylvania.
It happened the day before I spoke,
right.
And Cardinal Kroll, going in the car, told me, you said it's terrible news about this case, you know, and I don't see how the court could do it. I don't understand the courts. Go ahead.
So what we did was simply try to, you know, put what we wanted to achieve, put a figure on it. And the figure for the poor would come to about $50 million, $30 million. For the tax credit,
$100
that's right, yeah. For the tax credits, it would be less in our best judgment. It would be less than $500 million. And compared to the cost of this transfer to the public system,
yeah.
You know, it's a saving device. And then we looked at the suburbanites, and their needs are not quite so pressing, and if they want options, it's usually that initial construction cost, and we suggested a loan program to such people. We set up a reserve for the government. Now, these, I think, are enough of our suggestions. We could talk about other things, but I think I'll forego the U.S. question issue, so desire, or if I missed anything.
No, that's exactly it. We have one very strong chapter that addresses the non-public school sector. We felt that it would be untrue to the tradition of private education if we were to say the solution of all the problems rests with government. Most of the solution still rests with the non-public schools.
Yes.
So they gotta get to recruit themselves and go after it and not throw up their hands and say, who's gonna save us? And I think it's very good. And we were very excited to get that, particularly in Philadelphia, because I realized those people that it's like preaching to the choir. They know. But you're absolutely right. And it's true of so many parts of our society. They may not be able to survive without government assistance. But with out there helping themselves, all the government assistance in the world is going to have to survive.
That's why, Mr. President, we try to be as specific in our recommendations for the public schools themselves as we did in our recommendations for government action.
That's very good.
So it's some 20 specific recommendations I have.
That's what they ought to do.
Tightening up their budget, recruiting students, use of paraprofessionals, more volunteerism through the whole enterprise.
Right.
Cutting out the competition between private school systems that ought to be working together. Whole series of recommendations. And I think they'll have teeth. I would like to just to throw in my 2 cents.
That's going
to
happen anyway, regardless of how long the Congress delays on this, right?
Yes,
ought to go ahead and
yes.
I hope that in your briefing, which you indicated, you discussed this particular point, that I was very impressed with the fact that you weren't just coming in here hat in hand saying, gee whiz, please save us. I mean, as we are, because so many people in the field of education, well, a rather, shall we say, unimpressive lot are the presidents of our major universities. They've been here many times. I have never heard one of them say what they were going to do themselves. I have always heard them come in saying we need more money to subsidize our professors and more money to subsidize our students and all that. Never once have I heard them say what they were going to do themselves. A pretty sorry lot.
Mr. President, I was at one of the meetings. And honestly, you know,
as far as all the words you answered,
well,
as the president, you know,
I have to say, the president of the United States, sir, sat for one solid hour being lectured. And we're getting a little bit
right.
But that's
what we're doing. What did they say, though, they were going to do?
Nothing. And you asked.
Yeah.
I gave my speech after you left.
Yeah.
It was a brilliant one.
We're not going to help countries unless they're going to help themselves. That's what the administration is about. They are helping themselves, and they're going to make it. But the same is true here. If those that don't help themselves, God can't save them. Just a specific illustration of what the president had just Sunday. To operate my own parish school successfully and economically, and have the whole house just operated under capacity. Therefore, we had an intensive recruitment program for students. Along with the recruitment program, we had an open house. Half the students came to school, all volunteers, be in class for 2.5 hours on Sunday. All the teachers came, no pay, to show how they performed. And among our two distinguished guests here, Senator Percy and Congressman Kuczynski, and Kevin. Told them what we wanted in tax credits. In my parish, Mr. President, we have people who are presently putting 10% of their gross income into private education. They have 2 children in high school and a couple in the elementary school. You can run into well over $1,000. And I'm in a parish that's all blue collar. And the median income is around 10 to 12.
Yeah. So now that's a lot off the gross. Now that's better than tagging. That's 10% for tuition and fees. All sorts of families where the mother is working part-time to get this tuition. So when you talk about tax credits to them, they really come alive. They understand, you know, be a big, big break for their family budgets.
Right.
Property taxes have just gone up. Everything's gone up. So
yeah.
There's great enthusiasm.
Yes, I might add, the Mr. President, that the non-public schools have already organized and have been meeting on a regular basis. And one of the reasons for these meetings is to meet some of the very challenges that we are laying here before them. So I think this new organization known as the Council for American Private Education is going to be a big source of help to the non-public schools in this country. And they're going to be uniting in many of these efforts, I'm sure. So they are aware of the...
When was this formed?
This is formed.
Good.
It's a Council for American Private Education. In fact, in our first report to the President, Mr. President, we did recommend a meeting of the leaders of the major non-public school leaders throughout the country, which did take place. And since that time, they have met on three or four separate occasions and have organized and have a constitution as well.
The connection between the panel, deployment of the panel and the organization of the dovetail.
It was coincidental, apparently, that we established the Office of Education, the sponsorship of a meeting of the counterparts, public and private, in the 44 largest cities last fall. And this has now been requested by all parties as a regularized event each year. And the CAPE would be the natural structure for the non-public side.
They're already encouraging things on the horizon.
Yeah. In other words, they're coming alive.
Yes, they are.
Exactly. And they've been parochial and I think indifferent one to another's needs. We've been a catalyst at that.
We must be very sure that the report is broadly circulated.
Yes.
Not just doors still because it's in the paper and a few squibs in there that anybody's going to read it, but I'm going to read it in the leader's now.
How we felt that you're taking the lead in establishing a special panel, working with the Commission on the Non-Public Sector, made great sense. And I think what came out of it, there were certain times when the relationships were a little bit ambiguous, and I must have tried not to say that. But what came out of it was a twofold gain as I look back over these past 2 years. One was in a full commission, a greater sensitivity of the importance of the non-public sector, and their little chapter is very effective. And on our side, throughout this report, we have said repeatedly the importance of the public school sector is vital. So and this came, incidentally, Mr. Solzowski mentioned, it's a charter, as you know, Dr. Moreland, is that total cooperation, the seamless way.
Let me touch on a couple of things with regard to what you expect this year. You cannot really realistically expect any tax legislation during an election year. It will not happen, in my view. You might get it through the House, but by the time you get over to the Senate with their enormous problems of filibuster and all the other things, I think the chances are not too great when you have in mind the fact that you don't have much time left before the Democratic Convention. You see, you've got another month, you've got May, June, and then the Democratic Convention, and between the conventions, they may or may not do things. On the other hand, the administration's position on the matter, I have already stated the principle in Philadelphia that we will take these recommendations. Try to be less in regard to the chances of tax legislation being passed in an election year. I'm not very optimistic about meeting, let's say. On the other hand, you should press for its meeting.
Yes.
Press very hard because, first, I could be wrong, and toward the last of the session, with political pressure and the rest, all of a sudden, might come true with something. You see, the real trick is if they could take this and separate it out, hang it off of something else. But you see, if it gets involved in a whole mess of a tax bill, it's too complicated. And that's, then you're talking about months of hearings and hanging and debating and the rest. But if you could get this precisely taken out, that's what I have in mind, in some way to try to talk to her about what I'm doing and complement her design. That I would commend to you to keep this also in a bipartisan basis. Appearances before both platform committees. I would first want to say you were presently invited. Now that you were here for the Republican platform committee, obviously the Democratic platform committee will be delighted to have you also. And I would suggest that I would commend you doing this. That keeps it on a bipartisan basis. And because there again, you see, you're laying a foundation for the future. You see, take this part one, whatever we had in that, there's relevant little chance for HR1. The tax credit part, there is some chance. Provided we can separate it out. In other words, that's the scene where you're thinking about. But in any event, what you've got to do is to lay the case so that by strongly arguing for it now, you get it next time, you see, in the next session of the Congress, you see.
Sure.
And I think that's why the platform committees are the two that get up here. And then you get both candidates. You get the candidates, the Democratic candidate, and obviously the Republicans are ready for it, and they'll be for it too, they'll say they're ready. But you be very specific.
Yes.
And say, now look, we want this, and what you can do, and make them put it in the platform. See what I mean? That's advice I'm giving you now. We'll develop our own position, and I'll find, my own commitment here. I'm going to find a way to try to separate it out this year. And then to pour the heat on if we don't, to get it next year. I don't want to discourage you too much about this year, but I don't want you to have your hopes so high, right? Because because I know that Congress, and I know that as time goes on, particularly in the tax field, with Russell Long, the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, and Wilbur Mills, the House thing, that a lot of the they have it, as well, this might have majority.
This one undoubtedly has
majority support.
I have no question about this being able to pass the Congress, none. If you ever get it out of the floor of the Congress on a single shot basis, I'll protect a 2-to-1 majority for you. The problem is, having hung with it, a lot of stuff that others may not want. See what I mean?
Yes.
What you should try to do, what we should try to do, is to get this series into separate issue.
Okay, right.
So that'd be my strategy.
I think it might be useful, Mr. Johnson, for these panel members to know what you have commanded us to do in the Office of Education, AGW. And acting under Mr. Ellington's direction, we now have a full-blown AGW task force at work to do the very thing that the president has required, namely to find that elusive exclusion of work.
Right.
And both Lou Engman and Roy Moore have worked very closely with us on that, and expect to have a variety of options for you to weigh in the next 30 days.
Good. The problem, of course, with the court comes, yes, the problem, I've got a new comes. The problem with the court is a very troublesome.
Yes.
And I can never predict what the court will do. It would be some presumptuous, as of course, suggestion that I can affect it. But I do know that courts, despite their saying they don't, are sometimes very much influential. And make your case, keep making it, you know. And if you don't assume that it's made, you make one because you count and you count on five. It's horrendous cost of 5 million youngsters being dumped in the public school system. The necessity to maintain a free marketplace of ideas, the necessity to have the ingredient of character.
Well,
putting it quite bluntly, a little religion in school. I believe in it myself. That's not, you're not supposed to say it. I'll say that in the Supreme Court.
But the party is making a good idea too.
I think we're going to that vote. Well, as a matter of fact, you must, but remember that to the extent that you can affect public opinion, you may affect the court.
Yeah.
You see, don't ever say that. And God, and you ought to remember that that is still the pointer in this whole deal.
Yes.
Because even if we did, the Congress should pass it, the court could strike it down. And then you've got the constitutional amendment problem. And that is a horrendous problem. I just doubt if you can get 3/4 of the state.
I guess that.
3/4 of the state, which is the problem. You might have in Congress. But you get 3/4 of the state, and let's face it, and let's put it quite plainly, you just don't have enough Catholic population yet. And enough of the state, you get basic, you get a majority of the people, which you might, and a majority of the Congress, but I don't think you get 3/4 of the state. So, with this in mind, our best advice is to find something that is constitutional. Or will be held. What is constitutional? What did the court say? Something that we believe is a good chance to be held constitutional. Try to get it through this year, build a fire under it, and go all out to get it through next year, in case we don't get it this year. Having in mind the fact that the fight we make this year will make it possible that you win next year. And I said that our lieutenant decides we're not giving up this year. My goal is to do it now. And also there are pressures the other way. Sometimes in election years, they may have more heat on the ground than they would have in non-election year. You see what I mean?
Yes.
So you've got an argument that way too. But I'm just seeing a pile of stuff here. So that's the way it looks to me at the moment.
I think just to say 25 years from now, we've come a long way. 25, the first time I testified, just 25 years ago, about the city, about this town. Then we didn't even have a question. It was just close. People didn't ask, could you help the non-public school?
Yeah.
No, they couldn't. They were separation churches, they had to latch the door. Now at least, you and I think your leadership has done everything else. We've got everybody talking about how they should do it. And that's a big step forward.
Well, also the thing, the advantages that I can see as one who has attended public schools, as I did, through the sixth grade even here in Washington. And in order to get into college, they had to go to a private school. That's the trouble, as you know. That's why people send their kids to private schools.
For many communities.
In California, your high schools are just as good as the private schools, you know, in there. anywhere, you know, Florida probably, and Pitt, and that's right. But nonetheless, the point is that I was in a particularly good position to do it, because not being a Catholic, and being also an advocate of public schools, public education, I could say, why, this, we've got to think of this in those terms, and then that pulls it around, because otherwise, and then, and another thing too, is that, to be quite candidly, I have a great number of friends among what we call our fundamentalist Protestant groups, well, people like Billy Graham, and I talk to him about this issue, and I say, no, you leave us alone, and he says, all right, and he says, I agree. Now, I understand, I don't mean that you aren't going to get some pops from a few states, only a few others. On the other hand, we can deduce some of that. Well, we've given you cufflinks for sure, which can also be done. We got something new here, which is a little bookmarks. Since you were booking them, you can get little bookmarks, residential studio, and use them too. You can use them in your Bible, or your sweet, your book, or whatever you have to read. I believe in reading books, not burning them. You'll pass these on,
yes, sir.
And we appreciate your work and your dedication, and remember that don't get discouraged. It'll happen. The main thing, we've changed the climate already. Would you not agree, Dr. Marlowe, about climate change? Now, your job is to see that the NEA